Right, this is going to be another episode of Banter Give and Go. Obviously, I have prepped you in past episodes. This isn't a weekly show. We're not just doing who won the big televised game. We're just picking topics. And actually, this episode is going to be a good example of what I want us to do with this show. Because by picking a relevant topic, but one that you can easily backdoor into things like principles of basketball, what do you think of historical angles? I think, again, it's going to be a good aspect where, like true podcasts, if you notice my podcast style, I've always said this, was inspired by Joe Rogan. It's kind of the idea that you just start the podcast. You maybe have a couple of things you want to talk to, but you get to it in the conversation, you find your way there. And along the way, you never worry, because you notice people do say that when they come on our shows. You know, they'll go, I know this is a digression. I go, bro, the digressions are the show. Like, just go into the digression, because actually most of the gold comes from there. So what we thought we'd do for this episode is who would be the defensive player of the year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the other ones, we'll do like a different one for MVP and stuff, right?
I'd be down to do both conversations now, but DPOY is one that I did a little bit more research on.
Well, because maybe we'll start with Defensive Player of the Year and we'll see where we go with it. But yeah, the idea is we're definitely going to talk about Defensive Player of the Year. We'll either do a different video or we'll do this one. Maybe we'll talk about who the MVP is too. I think it's another good conversation. It's also the easiest one to have, because if you watch the game, you must have an opinion. Surely you have seen someone who was good. So let's start with Defensive Player of the Year. So I actually want to, I'll say this initially. I'll basically say, if you just look at the betting odds, then the most likely people to win are these following people. And I won't go beyond, like, I don't know, let me see, like, 7 or 8 names. Like, basically, the betting favorite at the moment is Rudy Gobert, for obvious reasons. He's won it in the past. Victor Wembanyama, the brand new player, understandably, is up there. Jarrett Allen is there. Bam Adebayo is there. Anthony Davis from the Lakers. Derek White. And then I'll just stop at Chet Holmgren. After that, you have people like Giannis, Jade. But they're just so far down in odds. And also, I just don't think anyone's going to pick them. So what we decided we're going to do on this episode is we're going to and analyze some of these, but tell us who we would have, and also get into the defensive aspect of the game. So first things first, I would actually say this, Maui, which is, what do you, when you think of like defensive players or defensive prowess or people who that's what they're excellent at, is that side of the ball? Because I was talking about this before we started. One of the things I've realized is kind of mad is in every sport I've noticed, defense is sort of an afterthought, unfortunately. Like, they have this one award here and they have the all defensive team, but people don't even treat it as seriously as like MVP or the all offense or the all NBA team in terms of like just how good you are as a player. They care more about those. And I'll even say, I immediately even noticed, if someone follows the NFL, you'll immediately see what I'm talking about when I say this as the abstract analysis of the award itself, which is in the NFL, there's obviously a lot of different positions on the defense in the NFL, but I'll tell you, if you ever go and watch, most of the times defensive player of the year in the NFL is basically the guy who gets the sacks. That's clearly the metric they care about, is sacks. Whereas, like, obviously you have all those amazing lockdown, like cornerbacks and stuff, and people getting the interceptions, right? But in the same sense, this, you'll see where the analogy is going. In the same sense, in basketball, the two stats, and you'll notice there's not a hard correlation between the two. It tends to be weak, or it depends on your style of play. The two types of defensive player in the NBA, obviously, are the big center who gets the blocks, or the perimeter player who gets the steals and locks you down. And I will say, much as like I pointed out, I think the NFL has a bias towards sacks over ints and just covering a guy, because obviously the problem with covering someone or being a perimeter defender is sometimes your success is not showing up. I mean, obviously now they do stuff like opponent field goal against you and stuff, but in a traditional sense, aside from if you steal the ball, you can actually have, like Pat Beverly, you could have an amazing game, but maybe you don't get a steal and someone won't know on the scoreboard you did the awesome job. So I will say the NBA seems to have a bias towards blocks over steals, in the same way as I conclude that the NFL cares more about sacks than interceptions, for example. Would you think something similar? Like, because when I looked at some of the names, it's actually why Michael Jordan winning that defensive player of the year way back is so impressive, because basically it's because he just had such bonkers like steals and blocks, and then was Michael Jordan, that like that's rare. Like, there's a reason why, by the way, if people don't know, like people like LeBron and Kobe haven't won this award. Like, it wouldn't matter even if they were in their best years. I feel like at the moment the defensive center wins this award. I mean, obviously it's quite fitting in this one because Rudy Gobert's again, right? So where are you at in terms of the overall award? How do you conceive of it?
Well, it's going to always, to me, favor some kind of position that is able to accumulate some sort of statistic, because at the end of the year, you know, halfway year point, whatever, I think people are going to come together. And just frankly, like, you can't watch every game. Like, nobody can watch every single game. So you have to use some kind of filter to make this work. I'm glad that there's advanced statistics now that have made this a little bit easier for people. Defensive rating, to me, has been one where it's like they're on off, they're plus minus. Like, how well does the team do defensive rating wise when they're on the floor? How well do they do it off? But obviously, there's more factors than that, because if they're off the floor, sometimes that also means that somebody else is off the floor, because yes, rotations aren't just single man in, single man out. It's not like, you know, European football where you're just like, you know, it's just one guy in, one guy out. There's so much more to the game than that. So you kind of, I think because everybody knows that you can't look at everything, you do have to then kind of put that filter on. You might think about blocks. You're going to think about defensive rating. I don't think people really think about steals too much, unless it's just, oh, wow, he has this many steals and he has that many blocks. Like, that's what made Hakeem Olajuwon such a sick player, is yes, that he had so many steals along with the fact that he had so many blocks. Like, if you combine his steals with blocks, he's so far away beyond anybody else in the league of all time that it's like, okay, that's why you would consider him in the greatest defenders of all time discussions. So for me, though, I wish I could see everything with an equal perspective, but because I can't, I would like the wing defenders are probably some of the most underrated, because they don't really gamble for steals as much as everybody else. They're not getting as many blocks as everybody else because they're usually funneling people to the centers. And so even if they're doing an excellent job, if you look at Defensive Player of the Year, the last time a forward won, I guess it was Giannis, but actually, that's not entirely true. Jaren Jackson technically won last time, but like, if you're talking about like really like small forward wings, it's Kawhi. But the thing is that Kawhi was such an anomaly also. He was kind of Jordan-esque in the way that he was able to cover perimeter people. He was basically guarding the 1-4 incredibly well. And even then, he was also guarding the 5 pretty well on top of that. So I feel like, for me, when I watch it, though, I just kind of think of overall impact. How much of the floor are they covering? How much of the defense are they reading? Because sometimes it's not even just about on-ball defense. It's about off-ball defense, too. And so I've watched more Draymond Green than practically everybody for the last 10 years. And I can say with certainty, like, he's affecting the game in a way that many other defenders, like even Kawhi, aren't, because he's moving so much more. Like, Kawhi was always a better on-ball defender than Draymond. But Draymond would always know where to help and when to help and how to cover the deficiencies of people on his team. And so I feel like that's an area where if I'm giving my DPOY today, I feel like he's done an incredible job at that for his team, where he's affecting so much of the floor anytime he's on defense. And to me, it's been a big reason. Well, thankfully, he's on a winning team this year, so I've watched him also way more than I have other years. But it's overall, I just feel like it's got to just be like more than just being on-ball defender. Like, some people are really good lockdown defenders. Like Pat Beverly, for example, to me, would never win a DPOY award, because he's just very good at being annoying to he's a pest, but he's not actually going to affect positions 3-5 that much.
Yeah, I see what you mean there, because like I say, unfortunately, essentially, I think I would frame it this way, Maui. Most years, let's be real, the Patrick Beverly guy probably shouldn't win. It's just that they don't even usually get even in this convo or even close enough, which I do think is unfair, because I'm with you. I do think sometimes those guys, I mean, the old school version, and people will know, is obviously like Shane Battier. Like, he was never going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but I'll tell you what, if you have players like LeBron and Kobe, it's D-Wade, like, that's the guy you're going to put on them. And if he even takes, by the way, 5% off their shooting or like 10 points off their game, he might have won you the game, literally. Like, he actually low-key might be your MVP of the game, is the joke. But like, because like you say, it's being annoying, that sometimes doesn't mean you even get a block or a steal or anything that could go into actual the traditional box score. Like we say, it has to be an advanced metric, like what is their shooting percentage against you specifically, or in isolations, or how do they work against help defense. Then there's also the factor that I do think here's the other problem, which is if we go back in time and we get a really old school person like Gary Payton, well, back in the days of half court NBA, when you had to have like the old illegal defense rules, you're going to just see him directly one-on-one defend all game long. The other problem you have with the perimeter defenders in the modern day is obviously the one thing, even this is why in a way, it's why in the NFL, for example, the game's not entirely cooked, even though they ruined all the defense, because defensive schemes is what developed more over the decades. So even though the like defense is harder, people just didn't have this, like essentially people didn't address the defensive side. I'd say they do the same in the NBA with the same level of like attention to detail that they did the offensive side. I actually think in the old school, they did sort of just say to people, hustle and play good defense, and then they just, you just went one-on-one. Whereas in the modern day, like, there are teams that are phenomenal at the schemes they run. I mean, I even think in the modern day, you don't even have to have the individual superstar player who would win this award. If you just have, like, a team that knows how to play, and they have, like, the equivalent of, like, the defensive quarterback who has comms, etc., like, stays in the middle, you could get loads done in the modern day. So I also do think, by the way, I see what you mean. It's way harder, especially because you'd have to watch loads of games just of this aspect to pick the really good perimeter defenders. Even though I'm with you, I do actually think Kawhi's a great example of somebody who should have won from the perimeter. Like, that guy was absolutely locking the best defenders in the whole NBA down. And he also had that thing like Michael Jordan where guy has enormous hands. He has enormous... But they're both, by the way, really physically strong. So that's why, as you point out, it's not like you can put the power forward on him and go, lol, like, mate, he's strong enough to do that. And, by the way, he's fast enough to keep up with your point guard. And then his enormous hands mean he's just going to pick the ball all fucking day long. And he can do that Kobe shit where you just... Because Kobe actually learned it from Gary Payton, if people don't know. It's where, like, what you do is when they're dribbling, they put their back to you. You don't, like, go over... What you do is you go, like, up and under their arm like that to just tap it away. Because you're not actually going to steal it. You're just going to tap it away. Then you're going to, like, run for it or die for it when they get out. That guy was amazing at that. And so I'm with you, by the way. One thing we're going to back into is, essentially, the reason I asked that at the beginning is, I do think it's mainly among the big centers, and that's the main aspect in the modern day. I also think that's where they let you play some defense. They'll allow you, once you jump up, to block a ball. They'll allow you to do that to some degree. I think perimeter defense is a bit harder. So what I'll say is, my old school example of a brilliant perimeter one is obviously the old school one when he was running Artest, not Meta World Peace. I also think he was fucking insane as well. If you ever saw him, he was a good example of someone where he didn't have to steal the ball, mate. He was so big and strong, you can't go past him, and good luck shooting. You know, there's another guy where some of these guys were actually amazing at not fouling and playing defense, which is almost impossible now. So let's start then with the obvious name, because the funny thing is, we actually talked about this guy on talk shows in esports before we ever did this show. And dude, it doesn't stop. The slander never fucking stops, because you might have seen this recently. Dude, did you see the clip where Shaq says Rudy Gobert is mega overrated? And it, basically, he tries to imply that it's just because, like, people, like, don't play defense now or something. It's so weird he would say that, because, mate, I want to just sit Shaq down and go, bro, Shaq, you were good at, like, raw blocking and obviously being big, but, like, this guy is actually doing a better job on defense than you did. And the joke is, if you actually did some of the things he did in your era, mate, you could probably, like, add, like, 3 more rings to your fucking career. What are you talking about? Like, we've talked about this many times before, but the real joke of the Rudy Gobert topic, about he is, to even get to the real Rudy Gobert, it's like I have to pierce the simulacrum of what everyone's gaslighting me that he is, which is everyone makes it sound like he's just tall, and they make it sound like he's, like, whack for being good at blocking or something. As far as I can tell, Maui, no joke, I think part of it really just is that stupid shit where all those years ago in the bubble he had, like, COVID and everyone got mad at him or something. I don't get why else you'd be hating on him. He doesn't even seem like I know, he's not great in interviews, but, like, what's to hate on? He's just a good player. I've said it. It's a player I would pick on my team any day.
It's just that it's like the Carmelo line about, just, do they have a bag or not in terms of their offensive? Are they a hooper or are they, like, an NBA player? It's because it's just because he doesn't really have a crazy good offensive game. He's the best defender in the league by a wide margin in my eyes, and yet people just don't want to respect him because they don't think that he can have, like, a hezzy pull-up jumper. It's like, who cares? Right. That's not his job. Like, that's just the dumbest thing ever. It's like, Kerrigan can't hit 5 flick op shots in a row. It's like, that's not what I want from him. I don't,
basically, because what you nailed there is, it's by saying hooper, because it's like when they keep doing this thing. You know, all the athletes now have podcasts and they'll do these videos where I'll watch it and I'll be like, I guess that was sort of fun, but what was the point at the end? You know what? They'll make a video where it'll be like, Melo explains why AI was a true scorer, but, you know, like, some guy who got, like, more points than him was just a good basketball player. Like, what do these terms mean? Essentially what you're saying is, like, this guy's a real man and the rest are bitches or something. Like, that's sort of like what you're trying to allude to or something, isn't it?
But the problem with, like, a lot of NBA discussions, especially when it's ex-players, is that it's kind of like they're just giving you the answer without giving you any of the reasoning whatsoever. Yes. It's like the antithesis of actually studying philosophy, where it's like, yeah, the answer to almost every philosophical quandary is probably, like, something you can explain in 3 sentences. But the thing is that it's about the reasoning and how they got there, which is really the more interesting part of all of studying philosophy. But for Carmelo, or, like, all these modern day players that are just kind of, like, becoming podcasters, is that they're essentially just saying, oh, yo, he's a hooper or whatever, and then it's just like, But why? And it's like, because he got handles or whatever. And it's like, because he got the, you know, because he can switch between his left and his right. And it's like, is that all your reason against?
He got that dog in him. You know, like, no, it's true. They are so bad. You know, the saddest thing you realize when you watch those podcasts, by the way, I'll tell you right now, this is why they all go broke. Because you can tell these guys have had an entourage of 20 people around them that have kept real opinions away from them their whole career. And so, you're saying, I bet when they're in like the smoking session and they say that thing, they're like, hey, you know, AI is a real hooper. Obviously, there is no convo. The guy just goes, shit, yeah, that's crazy, man, crazy. And then you just pass the joint. They're not having a big discussion, are they? They're not going on. For what reason? What do you think of the way perimeter? They don't give a shit about
none of that happens at all. It's like, actually, you know, when I've watched, like, when I've subjected myself to watching Arteezy's stream in Dota, anytime someone asks him a Dota question and he tries to answer it, it's like the most short answer ever. It's like, oh, because he got the game. He's got game or whatever. And it's like, I know you're focused on playing your Dota game, so you're not going to have the most long-winded response to this. But sometimes the people that are just simply the best in the craft, they might have some internal ideas as to what makes a player good or anything like that. But their ability to actually just elucidate upon that it's just so bad. Like they're not paid to speak. That's really all it is, other than the fact that they're working off their name brand value to just put themselves in front of a camera. And then it's like, hey, Carmelo's on a podcast or whatever, whoever it is.
Yes. So anyway, on the Rudy Gobert one, the reason why I bring up that Shaq point is because, like, not only do I think Shaq's wrong, but I agree with you. Mate, this is one of those ones where, I'm sorry, the Rudy Gobert guy is like early 2010s LeBron. It's like, if we're being real, they should just win the award every year. Like, what are we, only not giving him the award because you want a different storyline, or you think it's boring in the media, or you've just got voter fatigue. You just decided if there's any angle to give someone. By the way, they've done the same thing with Jokic. Like, the real reason Embiid won last year isn't because Jokic wasn't amazing. It's because they got bored of giving him the award every year. They wanted an American player to win. We all know that fucking angle. But anyway, we all know what's the way their bread is buttered on that one. So I have to say, as much as it's a boring answer, I thought we'd just get out of the way at the beginning. I would absolutely just give it to Rudy Gobert again. I think he's fucking sick, mate.
Yes, for some more stuff about it, because I've watched more Gobert this season than I probably have in almost every season, because I actually like watching the Timberwolves, whereas the Jazz before were, you know, they're okay to watch, but like, I'm not really getting too excited by them.
Well, obviously, obviously the Timberwolves actually have all the team, don't they? Whereas the Jazz only really, the Jokers have like Rudy Gobert at this point in time. Like, that team's a bit scoffed, isn't it?
Yeah, so with because I just get to, because I'm just consciously and willingly tuning into way more T-Wolves games this season, I feel like one thing that I never noticed about Rudy Gobert, and I feel like it's actually probably more, a newer addition to his game, is that his ability to cover the perimeter is so much better now, because I notice he does this thing with his body where if he has to jump out to somebody on the perimeter, he angles his body actually consciously to his shoulder to them, so he can still reach his arm out, but he never over jumps at them. Like, sometimes bad people, when they're getting, if you have to recover because there's like a corner pass or something like that, what happens so frequently is that interior guys just kind of like face block them. They go forward with their chest, but Rudy actually just kind of like lunges at them with one leg, and then he'll reach his arm out. And because his wingspan's so big, he can actually block corner three players so well. But another thing is that, like, if they try to blow by him, well, he's already in a position where he's not going to just, like, lose his footing. Because I remember watching him in, like, the earlier or mid-2010s, and he would just get, like, people would blow by him. If he has to close out on a player that's trying to shoot from the wing or whatever, he's just going to get blown by, and that's just one of the lacking things in his defense. Now, he actually is jutting out and able to still recover, even if they go for another pass. So he's covering so much ground. And one thing that I found actually is that his actual like defense. Okay, so the NBA covers like how much distance you run. If you actually look at Rudy, how much Rudy runs on defense alone, Rudy is running, I think it was, he's running the seventh most distance in miles covered this season with anybody, like, or of anyone with 60 or more games. And that's a center. You expect a center.
And he's 31 years old, man. That's pretty legit. Yeah.
He's not. Yeah, you expect a center is going to just be like planted in the middle. Yeah. And obviously, like, most of Gobert's defensive highlights are if he's just in the middle. Yes. But he's actually going out so much more on the exterior because he has to play alongside one, Karl-Anthony Towns. So like, they can't both be like just people that are just standing in the center. And two, he has to play by Jaden McDaniels, who's kind of like the power forward of the Timberwolves also, who is really underrated, by the way. I could talk about him too, but like, just to stick on Gobert, like, he's just moving so much more than I remember him ever doing.
No, I'll give you that, because there's another thing. I'll actually tie it to Shaq again. One of the things that Shaq consistently says on Inside the NBA, that I'm sorry, like, I normally don't do this with opinions, because opinions are by definition subjective, but I just think you're flat out wrong. Like, I totally disagree with it. Is famously, and he's had this conversation with, like, I remember there was I can't remember which female player, but there's actually a female player came on, and sort of low-key checked Shaq on this, because she played more recently than he did. Shaq does that thing where he still doesn't understand that, like, not only have the rules changed of like how the game's refereed, but obviously the analytics have literally changed. He still essentially, Shaq doesn't understand what spacing is. He thinks that it's just 90s basketball, but you just shoot the three ball now, like, and you just go coast to coast instead of half court. It's like, no, the problem is the spacing, bro. That's the biggest issue. So what he doesn't get is, he always talks about, you know, like, you know, those conversations through the years where they would always be like, what happened to the big man? And then he'd do that boomer thing of like, they just need to learn the sky hook and, like, you know, just fucking essentially, like, just get some balls, just fucking play. And then when people would tell him, like Kenny and Chuck, like, yeah, but Shaq, you wouldn't be as good in this area. He's like, what are you talking about? I'd be fucking sick. But what he doesn't get is this. Obviously, on the offense, he would dominate. In fact, the joke is he might score more now. But what Shaq doesn't realize is he would be such an insane defensive liability. It would be fucking mental. Because with the spacing, the good perimeter shooting teams, all they would do is just find Shaq's fucking man and just take the three-point shot from the corner. And he'd get, and because he'd just be stood in the paint, he'd have to give it up. He'd be giving up wide open threes. The difference is, as you're saying, Rudy Gobert isn't a liability. He not only can clog the plate, but he can also, because that's the thing, he actually has way more sort of like mobility than you'd expect from a center. He can actually fucking go out there and defend you too and block you, as in block your path. Like, that's big. In the modern day, that is huge, because the reason why I'm shocked it actually took them so many years to get to the era of spacing, it's because, dude, you'll have heard this back in the day. There's a very, very famous line that people who are coaches and come from like an actual like teaching background in basketball always say. The way they always encourage skilled players to pass is they would always say the ball can be passed faster than you can run. So the premise should always be, if you swing the ball, if they're loaded up on our side of the floor when we're on offense, if you swing the ball to the other side really fast, they can't get there in time. So actually, that corner guy was always open. It's just that people didn't understand this premise. In the modern day, everyone understands it. In fact, the irony is they understand it too much, hence why there's those like clown clips you see where someone actually turns down an open like layup to pass to do a three-point. You watch those ones and you're like, bro, you're never beating the allegations if you do that pass. Just put that one in the basket, you know. Like, but it's why they do it, because they're so trained to just pass out to the furthest away and let him shoot. The point is, Rudy Gobert is your best answer of a big man in this world, whereas actually the old school ones, who, by the way, would have won this award 34 years ago, those are players actually defensively wouldn't be able to play in the NBA now. And by the way, if all they do is sit in the middle as well, like I said, they will let you jump up and block it, but I'll tell you what, you can't just stand out on the edge of that fucking the defensive fucking zone guys anymore. You can't just stand on that little curve. They'll call that foul all day long when fucking like Devin Booker's going to the basket or something. Like, you know, so it's also a world where I do think people like Shaq, actually from his generation, they don't understand how nerfed that style of defense is. I'm with you. Rudy Gobert's a modern day defensive center. It is so wild to me though, dude, that people actually think that thing, that cause he's not a stud on offense, he's like a fraud. It's like, bro, you are to start to that second about it, you are the fraud. Because what you don't understand still, and this is always, I'll tie it back to an abstract concept, the reason why I actually really care about defense in these games, Maui, is because most defense is effort, or essentially a type of intelligence, a type of pattern recognition. Essentially, what's brilliant about defense is oftentimes it isn't just from physical ability or some like skill factor, whereas the problem with the shooting and the offensive side of the game is, unless you're laying it up, you can have an off game where you can't just make a shot that day, you just play like ass. You can always play defense, in my opinion, and in fact, that's actually why, you notice, one of the reasons why I do go so fucking hard on LeBron, but to a lesser degree Luka, is because, bro, you guys just, you're taking half the game off. I can see that you're taking a breather from the last three moves you did. Where's the difference is, like, that's actually the joke is, that's why you'd want this guy on your team, because since he plays defense as his shit, and so does Pat Beverly, etc., they'd even help you, mate. They'd do the other side of the ball, because, no, like I say, we can get to the other names. There's lots of fun convos, but I would just say straight up, I would just give it to Rudy Gobert. I don't care if you think it's boring. Spoiler, being really good. By the way, that's also another thing. Defense is meat and potatoes. It's going to be boring. It's going to be just clogging the lane. It's going to be just doing that. It's going to be just annoying someone. By the way, that's also why people hate defensive players, because everyone's pissed off that their favorite player player isn't scoring. He's shutting your favourite player down. That's what you don't like, is that he blocked your player in it. Let's be real.
Yeah, with, I mean, defense is why, actually, for like the pleb, this last Super Bowl was probably pretty bad. But in reality, it was actually so hype because it showed just like, I'm just using that as an example because I assume a lot of people watch that. But sure. I mean, it built up the intensity so much for that game because it was so hard to score. And then finally, at the end, obviously, Kansas City rail off of a couple. And it was like, everybody knows like that was a hard game to get anything done with. So good defense is always going to be kind of like, it's why people probably don't like baseball as much anymore, because people like the steroid era of when everybody was just like slamming home runs over and over again.
Yes.
But now you kind of have to be a fan of pitching, which is obviously like defense. You have to be a fan of defense to actually want to watch that game. But like,
I've actually realized the most insane analogy. And listen, I'm actually secure enough, Maui. Unlike everyone who says, I'm so secure, my sexuality. I don't need to. I'm so secure. I'm actually just going to say this, even knowing what it sounds like. So obviously, yes, prepare the jokes. You can all laugh. My analogy goes like this, Maui, right? If in theory, if you weren't good at sex, you would in theory, if you actually were just thinking abstract, you would think, well, I'd rather she faked it than just did nothing. But actually, the point I'm going to make here is you think you want that because you think that's one grade down from her actually enjoying the experience. Actually, the joke is if you did know she was faking it, it would actually ruin the experience for you. It actually probably would be worse than her reacting not at all. So even though, yes, insert the jokes. My point is, I think that's what it's like with defense as well, mate. I think the problem people have is like exactly that analogy. Is like they don't really like... They think they want it, but they don't. Like, it actually pisses them off that defense exists. It's like you say, the baseball one's the best example. Because in theory, obviously, if you ask a kid, what's the best thing you want to see at a baseball game? Home run. Yeah, but if you know it's because the guy injected like a horse's balls into his arms, like, it's not really that. You want it to be, what you really meant is it's like upsets in Counter-Strike. You want a real upset. So if you can't get a real upset, you'll take a bullshit upset. But then eventually, as we've all figured out in Counter-Strike, eventually you realise the fake upset isn't really that satisfying either, though, is it? Like, you know what I mean? So it's actually a problem sports has in general at the moment, is that we're trying to, like, fake the supply of awesome moments, but then if you really know the sport, like the fake organ, once you realise it's fake, it doesn't really work again. You're right back at the square one, aren't you? It's like, this isn't the best example ever, Maui, that, like, when they pumped up scoring in the NBA, well, I'm sorry, now to me, in my brain, it's like HLTV rating 2.0. I just take 30 points a game and make it 20 like it used to be, because essentially I pro-rata down to what I think it should be, basically, you know?
The whole reason that it's like, I mean, people would watch the All-Star game if all they cared about was slam dunks. You know, like when there's no defense, it's just not exciting at all. When people show me Zywu face it highlights, I'm like, who cares? Who cares about any of this? I don't care. He dropped 50 in 20 rounds. Like, that means nothing to me at all. It's like, do you want, like, we all hate smurfing. We all literally hate smurfing. Like, nobody's excited by it whatsoever. We want to see the best players in the world play the best players in the world. And if in the NBA, like, the defense kind of continues this route and it just kind of gets worse and worse and worse and you get less people like Gobert's, then scoring's going to feel like nothing. It's already why I feel like when people are like, oh, this guy averages 30 points. Like 15 years ago, that was insane. That's insane to even consider anybody averaging more than like 27 points. And now it's like, oh, really? That's it? Like, I mean, okay, I feel like there's like 7 guys in the league probably averaging that at this point. Like, it just doesn't feel nearly as remarkable. So, yeah, your analogy is crazy, though.
The reason I did the disclaimer is now everyone's going to go, a big problem for you, is it Thor? I don't give a fuck.
I'm willing
to just commit to the bit. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine.
By the way, another more abstract point I wanted to bring up, and we can get into some of the more names there as well, is I will say I also do have a problem with this particular award, which goes like this. So I'll give you the best example version of it, in my opinion, is when he was in his prime as a player, obviously Kobe used to get voted as one of the all defensive players. He used to be on the all defensive first team many, many, many times over, right? And so it usually actually meant, even though he was never going to win defensive player of the year, whenever they did those surveys of coaches, they actually would pick him as like one of their top 2 or 3 defensive players. But here's what I always hated, Maui. They would do it at the same time he was playing with Meta World Peace, who was really fucking good as a perimeter defender, as in saying that's the guy who was defending LeBron most of the game. And here's my problem is, one, I feel like if you're an offensive star and you do play good defense, you get overrated on defense. Like, you essentially get pumped up. Like, they did it, by the way, to both Kobe and Jordan. They pretended they both locked down the other star perimeter play all game. They don't. What they do is they pick and choose when they need to do it. In fact, they even do what I said earlier. If their game's not going, maybe that's the game they try and lock you down. They know their shot's not falling, so I'll lock you down a bit more and make up that way. But the difference is, in my opinion, this award mainly should be for defensive specialists. Like, if people remember way back, it's actually about 10 years ago, that was around 2013, 2014, when people said LeBron should win. But that was the time when, if you remember, Marc Gasol won the award instead. Now, my problem with that, Maui, this is the point I'm going to make, is that was the best of LeBron on defense. And by the way, he was very good back then. But he was very good for a superstar player. The difference was, Marc Gasol was an amazing defensive player. And here's what, and the joke is, he's like the team at that point. He's your defensive side of the ball. Like, everything's going to be going through him based on him. So I will say, when we go through this list, I automatically have a sort of bias towards the people who are just, their whole game is defense. That's what they're here for. If you're someone like, I mean, the obvious example of one that I didn't even put in the list is, if you're Giannis, you're really on here because you're Giannis and you play some fucking defense as well. You're not here because anyone actually thinks you're the best defensive player in the NBA. Like, no one does. Let's be real. I don't think people even on your team thought you were the best player necessarily. Whereas the difference is, if you go into the middle and you want to talk about, like, Anthony Davis, who's sort of between the two, he's a bit of both. We can go between on those ones. So who do you want to do next? We had the big list there. Who do you want to go to next? Who's interesting?
Well, we could do, I mean, I've also watched a ton of Wemby this
season. Oh, let's do that one. So. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Wembanyama is just for a rookie especially, I feel like the physical tools that he's equipped with are so spectacular and almost alien that just by sheer virtue of those alone, you would think he has a great chance. But it's the fact that he goes beyond just the attributes, that he actually has good positioning, that he disturbs the defense or the offense so much. And he's such a great disruptor. And I remember watching in preseason games against Wemby, where teams were almost, it felt like they were limit testing, where people were trying to see, like, what can I get around this guy? And they learned very quickly that you can't just take a normal shot if he's 3 feet away from you, because he will block it. Like, he's not uncoordinated by any means. So what's great about it is that he can reach, he's kind of similar to Gobert. He's pretty nimble, actually. The one thing that I think Wemby has a problem with is he comes across flat-footed a little bit more than Gobert. That being said, like, I would probably put him in my top five defenders that I've been watching this year, because when he's just around, his presence is just, it's like Gobert's. Like, people feel him so much so. If he were able to kind of, like, block people, like, if, I don't know if I really want Wemby to put on more weight necessarily, but if he wanted to be the best defender he possibly could, it wouldn't be the worst idea, just because then he can, if he just broadens his shoulders a little bit, gets a little bit wider, then he can use his length and his wingspan in conjunction with the fact that he would be a little bit bigger to just slow people down, because I do see him get blown by a little bit more than a person like Gobert, and so he does try to avoid going towards the outside. He doesn't do closeouts with as much enthusiasm as Gobert does. That being said, like, man, inside, like, people try to get really crafty around Wemby, and he still blocks them because he's just so much taller than all these other people, and because his wingspan is so crazy that even if you think you're doing some little tricky move that might even fool, like, a 6'11 center, Wemby is 5 inches taller, and his wingspan's, like, 8 inches longer than those guys, and so where you thought you were getting the edge on them, he's already covering so much ground so quickly, and it's like, I don't even have to see him always block it with his hand. Sometimes it's, like, blocking with his arm because they try to get so crafty that it's, like, they threw it into his forearm or something like that. So it's not even, it's just, he's just such a ridiculous force that I would imagine, like, this year already, I'd put him as my top five, but I can very easily imagine in 3 years, he's the best defender in the league. And I'm not even saying that as, like, the overrate him because his offense is good too. It's like the effect he has on the floor is tremendous.
Yeah, actually, the thing you nailed at the end there is what I want to pick up on, which is, he isn't going to be my pick. I would pick Rudy Gobert, but I would still have him very high up. I'd probably have him top three or four. I might even have him as my third pick or something. I think he was very good. And the crucial thing to me is this. There's two parts. One is, if I didn't tell you this was a rookie player and I showed you, one, his numbers, and two, his game, he already really could win this award. So that already is telling, and it leads into what you just said there. The good news is this, guys. He isn't going to win this year. I'm almost certain this player will win win this award at some point in his career. Maybe, like you're saying, just 2 or 3 years. In fact, I'll even go one further. I think the point at which he starts to win Defensive Player of the Year is when he then will have a chance to win MVP of the NBA as well. Because the difference is, like what I said earlier, he won't be doing it. And they're like, he's a great player who also plays defense. This guy could be really good on both ends of the floor and in an unstoppable way, like you say, because I'm with you. Like, I'll first of all get right out of the gate, because every time you talk about this player, because he plays on the Spurs and is amazing as a rookie, he's obviously going to be compared to Tim Duncan, because Tim Duncan, by the way, was actually amazing in his first season. He was even better than this. He was like, he was again a stud where if you had to take the nameplate off, you'd be like, is this a 5-year NBA veteran? It's like, no, it's a rookie, for fuck's sake. So Tim Duncan was a monster, but you have to realize, guys, even Tim Duncan's blocks and steals numbers work like this. And this guy's in his first fucking season. This is like, he has better numbers in those areas than prime Tim Duncan. And then also the other thing is, Tim Duncan was really long. You have to go, guys. If you've only watched them play the game, what you need to do is see the pictures where it's the Wembanyama with normal people next to him. You don't understand, like, obviously, I'm not saying this offensively. Genuinely, this guy, if basketball didn't exist, could be in like a freak show. Like, his arms are insanely long. Like, it looks like, for real, like someone's edited, like made like a Photoshop or something, doesn't it? When you see, in real life, when you see his arms, it looks like someone's just extended it like a meme, you know, like someone that's giant, sticky leg. So as a result, it's not even just like, bro, he's one of those ones where I'm glad people came with that terminology, where it's not even like if he gets the block that's recorded. Mate, how many altered fucking shots is this guy causing? 1 billion, I feel like. Like, this is a guy where you've even seen now, and the fact he's in his rookie year and people are doing this is fucking mental. Bro, people are already playing differently against him. You already see it's in their head that they can't go for certain shots, because as you say, like old school, like Wilt Chamberlain or whatever, this guy can block the unblock shots. Like, it's actually why low-key I'm sort of sad in a way also that this guy exists, Maui, in the era when there are only about like 3 people who play my style of like defensive mid-range, because boy, I would love to see, for real, I would love to see this guy against like prime Kobe or D-Wade when they try and do those like fadeaways and like mid-range shots. Bro, I think he would block a lot of them. I think he actually would either block or he would literally make them not take those shots. I think they would get sick of seeing like floaters get blocked, like the fadeaway would get blocked. Because the theory, that the reason why, if people don't know, Michael Jordan, Kobe's fadeaway was so unbeatable, it's because a normal perimeter player can't reach that because you're going backwards to shoot it. This guy, for real, would actually be able to get to that sometimes. This would actually fuck with even the best players. So really, like, essentially, he's already really good now, but this is one of the most ironclad locks for the future I have ever seen in basketball. Like, I know people overhype the offensive side because they made it like he literally was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but like the defensive side makes this really interesting as a player, actually. Because how were you? I started out watching it actually for the freak show reasons of like, whoa, like what's going on? A bit like when Zion Williamson came in the league. But mate, what keeps me watching is he's actually a good fucking player. And the more you watch, he is adapting. And after, if this is your rookie season, you wouldn't even have to improve and you'd still be one of the best players in the NBA. And he is going to improve, I'm pretty sure. So no, I think this is a banger. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really something special that, like, because basketball has become such a global sport now that we have people like this, because I just looked it up. Like, for people that are 7 feet or taller, there's only 2,800 people in the world that are even that. And for them to
the whole world, that's mental. What?
Yeah. There's not that many. Yeah. Like, I mean, how often do you see a 7 foot person? True. Like, I never see it. True. Even in New York, I never see anybody that tall. Like, I see people that are like 6'8" and it's like, whoa, that person's super tall. But for one of them to be this coordinated of one of those two, like under 3,000 on the planet, it's just so fortunate that basketball has gotten to the point where, like, as soon as they notice some kid has a growth spurt like that, they're like, try basketball, play basketball, see if you can do this. You know, like, so, it's just, I think like there's some insane percentage where it's like, if you are actually above 6'6" and you play in like college basketball, your chance of making it to the NBA is something like really kind of like relatively easy. Like, I want to say it's some number like 15%.
That seems insane though, doesn't it? Because like that implies that, like, sight unseen, the guy just says, I see you're 6'11". Well, flip a coin. Oh, yep, off to the NBA. You go like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, I have to see his game, surely.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like probably, I bet you that number was like way lower back in the day because like people aren't being raised to be basketball players like 40 years ago as much as they are today. And everybody knows that you can change your entire life if you actually just become pretty serviceable at this game or really just to commit yourself to it and you're that height. So yeah, no, for Wemby, I mean, final thoughts on him. It's just that the fact that he's doing this in his rookie season, leading the league in blocks, he's top 20 in steals total. In terms of contested shots, he's like, deflections per game, he's in the top 10 also. Like all these stats that are already showing that, like, I think in other years, it's almost kind of criminal that he's a rookie in some ways because people are so averse to give rookies these kinds of awards. Yep. But I actually think that if they just looked at these stats 4 years from now, the eye test still says Gobert. Like I would still, I'd still say Gobert today versus Wemby would do it. But in terms of like, you know, all these narratives that always come up in voting in award season is like voter fatigue or like, oh, what about this guy? Does he deserve a shot? If Wemby had been doing what he's doing now, the exact same player for 5 years straight and Rudy had already four DPOIs, I think Wemby might just straight up win the award because of like voter fatigue probably. But because he's a rookie, he's just never going to win this award. But I can see a total case for him being top three. Again, I'd probably have him top five. But I mean, I feel like this guy I would say it's pretty safe to say within 5 years, he wins an award, wins DPOI.
And the other way you could say it is if there just was no Rudy Gobert, he might win this year. Oh, yeah. Could absolutely win. Yeah. Oh, I'll also say, if you go and look it up, the funny thing is, like you said, the analogy you gave earlier, it's actually Hakeem Olajuwon. He was the closest because that's another guy, like you say, who not only got the blocks, he had a fuck ton of steals too. So, no, he's in that category. He's tracking like that. And obviously, like, we're talking about prime Hakeem Olajuwon guys. So, again, we're not even comparing them when they're rookies. Like, if I can compare you favorably to prime Hakeem Olajuwon and prime Tim Duncan, you're probably pretty fucking good if you're a rookie. That's pretty insane company to be in.
So I actually also looked up like blocks per game as a rookie. The only people that have more than Wemby, if he just kind of ends the season right now, are Manute Bol, David Robinson, Alonzo Mourning, and Shaquille O'Neal.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Makes sense. Like everybody knows these names. So yes, it's exactly. Just, and he had more than Mutombo and Hakeem. He beat him out by just a little bit in their rookie seasons and Tim Duncan himself. So yeah.
Yes. Right, I'll tell you what, we don't have to go in order, obviously. Another one, like I said, just because it's a big name. Why don't we do Anthony Davis? Why don't you do Anthony Davis to the Lakers? Because here's the problem. The first thing I'm going to do to open this conversation goes like this, Maui. It's funny how much of sports, I'm sure you've noticed this, once you get really into doing analytical stuff in Counter-Strike and esports, you realize not only is this the same shit they're doing in sports, but we're actually more advanced in fucking esports. As much as I call all the plebs morons and stuff, because they are really bad, I'll give credit to the content creators and the analysts. Mate, we're way above the level of the sports ball shit you see on TV. Because I have to say, one of the problems anytime I hear this player discussed is it's like I need to know before you give me your opinion, right? How much of a LeBron fan are you? And do you actually do you just hate if the Lakers lose and Anthony Davis didn't have enough points? Because if those answers are yes, like I can't even get to the again, I have to pierce the veil. Like in the same way as the Gobert discussion, can't get past this like weird, in that case, it's like a weird thing about what's cool among hoopers sort of. In this case, the problem is if you're a massive LeBron fan, your job, if you're Anthony Davis, is to be the whipping boy and just take the abuse for every time LeBron loses. Because I've always felt, the reason why I say it, we have to get the cards on the table in that sense, is because it's always skewed every discussion. Like, bro, it's the same with all LeBron teammates, especially in this era, the Cavs and the Lakers era, but especially Anthony Davis. Mate, if you read what LeBron fans think, you'd think this guy was a complete bomb or something. You would never believe it's a player who, for real, could average 30 points in a playoff series. Like we're saying, by the way, is legitimately in defensive player of the year discussions, block the fuck out of things, incredibly tall, very skilled. Like essentially, if I'm to say, what don't you like? That's why I have to know, I like LeBron, so I hate him, the answer. So how do you resolve that part of the equation? How do you take him in isolation outside of the Lakers?
Well, I always rated AD really highly, especially when he was coming into the league. Sure. I remember it kind of felt like actually sort of that Wemby sort of potential because all the physical attributes and gifts were there.
He was also a monster in his rookie seasons too, mate. He was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, on the Pelicans, he was a monster. He was probably one of the first guys where, like, for non-Warriors players that I was just really keeping my eye on, too. Total complete package. I feel like when I watched him most this year consistently was actually the in-season tournament where he was just so good. I remember versus the Suns, he was like really. He actually had some moments against Devin Booker where he was guarding him pretty well. In the championship game against the Pacers, like he was the primary distributor, disruptor against them too. So I feel like AD this season, it's hard to separate his defense from the fact that it feels like his mid-range game has sort of fallen off a little bit. But if I wanted to just like think about purely his defense, I don't really feel like he's lost a beat, actually, because I remember a week ago he was playing against the Bucks and he was one of those few people, because when you talk about Giannis, it's like there's no guy that's better in the league at just getting downhill, you throwing his shoulder, like kind of like lowering his shoulder into an opponent and then just kind of getting them off balance. And he actually did that to AD on one possession, and AD, one, didn't lose too much ground, and two, he actually was able to recover to block Giannis's shot. So like he's one of the few people in the league that's like he's nimble enough that he can actually defend 1 through 5 positions. You don't want him on the one all the time, like on the point guards all the time, but he can handle himself there. And he's also strong enough and he's not going to like get off his feet too much that he can guard like even to me like the strongest offensive player in the league, which is Giannis. So in terms of defense, I don't see a world where he's not also a top 5 defender. Maybe it's like how engaged he always is, because it feels like, but I feel like that's just kind of a game to game thing. And maybe I'm also, I could be conflating his offense, because like sometimes his offense just rubs me the wrong way so badly in terms of his just kind of like lack of killer instincts that I think that maybe he loses focus on the defense also. And it's just like, okay, is he just not tuned in this game or what? But when he's locked in, which is what I saw in, for example, the in-season tournament, and when he plays a good team, it feels like he does lock in more than other times. Then it's just like, I mean, he's got what it takes. And like, it's kind of almost a shame that I don't think AD is ever going to win a ring without LeBron, because he's always just going to be in his shadow, because this guy, for all intents and purposes, probably easily could have been a top 5 player in the league year in, year out. But now it's almost like, because he's LeBron's sidekick in the narrative aspect, it's hard to really see him overtaking him.
Even though I will just say, because obviously I'll address the LeBron shadow, or in this case, gravity, event horizon we can't escape in this conversation, right? The real problem, like I say, is LeBron fans, it's been a thing they've done in the entire NBA. It's a classic psychological move. If you don't know, the most obvious way, think about all humans do this, the most easy way to not address a flaw in yourself is to find a flaw in someone else and just focus on that. Essentially, it's distraction, right? You just say, yeah, but what you, essentially, even if you acknowledge you did something, yeah, but what you did is worse though, so that's more important than what you... They just do that with all of his teammates, but Anthony Davis especially. I've never seen a superstar take a beating like this from fans. Bro, they didn't... Listen, I might hate on what they did to like role players, LeBron fans, but like they're treating... Here's the difference. AD is like as good as LeBron. They treat it like he's Kevin Love and LeBron's with him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The fuck are you talking about? Like, they never did this to Dwayne Wade. I don't get why they're doing this, because maybe it's because LeBron's old and he himself doesn't play defense now, because, bro, I don't get it. Like you say, when they say he's a sidekick, it's like, bro, let me know which sidekick averages 24 points, 12 rebounds, 3 offensive rebounds, and fucking like multiple, like, what are you talking about? That's like MVP fucking stat line in itself, boys. Like, if that was on the top team, that player would be an MVP candidate. At top 5 this season right now with those stat line. And then also on the LeBron thing, I also think the problem is this, right? One thing I actually think is amazing about LeBron's game, but I don't think it's a positive, is... Here's the thing. When I say he's stat pads, I don't actually think what LeBron haters do, which is that he's sat there really thinking like, how many more points do I need to get to a triple down? I don't think he really does that. I think he's stat pads more in the sense that like when the game's going badly, I do think LeBron goes, hey, I'm getting this rebound, and takes the easy rebound. I do think he goes like, nah, I'm just going to fucking dribble in and give to the obvious open man, like the easiest assist. I think he does do that. But essentially, the reason I say that is I essentially think LeBron has like probably their best game to just make make his box score look good game to game to game to game. So it's why he looks very, very consistent. Whereas I will say Anthony Davis, the biggest knock I would give on him, it'll tie into what you were talking about, is he is one of the most streakiest superstars I've ever seen play basketball. He really is the guy, everyone who's watched the playoffs knows this whole career. He's the guy who will drop like 30 and 20 one game, and then he might just have like 16 points to be quiet in the next game. But you're like, where's the other guy? Because that, let's be, I think I've sort of answered my own question. I'll be fair to them. In the same way as they hate on Rudy Gobert because he is kind of like a nerd who plays basketball, whereas they want him to be a hooper down at the park, they're also low-key, like, sort of hating on Anthony Davis because he's streaky. And let's be real, even though the joke is they wouldn't actually say this about him, he doesn't have that dog in him. The joke about him is because he seems like kind of a hood guy and he has the status with the other, like, players, they would never say he doesn't have, but he doesn't have the dog in him, Maui. Like, literally, for real, this is one of those guys. Like, you know, I always say in Couch Strike about Config that the reason I even sort of told him publicly he's an idiot, it's because it's like, bro, give me your fucking skill set. And even just with Thorin's brain, let me have a fucking play. I'll win a few MVPs, mate. I'll go fucking crazy. I'd love to have the skill set of that guy. But you watch him, and when you're watching, you just go, like, you're not making use of it. This guy, no joke, again, as long as he was healthy, because obviously the other killer in his career is the injuries. If this guy had been healthy, fuck, I'd love to have this skill set. This would be an amazing player to like start your franchise with, build around. Like, this, it's unbelievably good. But the problem is, he really does look, no joke, like he actually has that thing that I've seen in Counter-Strike where people who are really skilled, when they're like in a down period where the game's not going and also, and they don't like to grind, they're just sort of like, I just don't feel like it though. And you're like, you want to go, like, bro, to even have that option. Like, you do know no one else has that option. Like, everyone else has to kill themselves in Counter-Strike to get a 1.15 rating, mate. They can't just go, I'm just being chilling at the moment. Because if you don't know, by the way, even people like Forrest used to do this in 1.6. Like, my team's not really winning at the moment, so I've kind of lost interest. I'm playing a bit of Dota at the moment. You know, I'm still pretty good, but like, Anthony Davis does that because you nailed it when you said it there. It's the opponent. If he has the right opponent, like if the big televised game comes, he'll fucking level up and he'll play real basketball. But if you put him on a Tuesday against the fourth worst team in the league, this guy won't even shot on them. He might just fucking just phone it in and just like, ah, oh, gives a shit. And the joke is the Lakers might even lose that game. So anyway, to bring it all the way back, I do think actually, that was more about like as an overall player, I do think he's actually mad underrated defensively, mate. Not least because, how the fuck are people going to simultaneously tell me LeBron is still good and does play defense? And by the way, they've had people on their teams like Pat Beverly and Austin Reeves and people who play real defense. Spoiler, if these all people were playing defense, the Lakers would be an amazing defensive team. Look at how many players. I think this guy is really good. And quite frankly, in the modern NBA, where like you see like what monsters the centers are now that are actually good. If you didn't have this guy, you'd have no chance. Like, this guy's actually so pivotal. I still think he's the X factor on the Lakers, mate. He's so big. So actually, I'm also with you on this. Like, here's the thing, if there was no Rudy Gobert, I'd also seriously consider this player. I think it's a legit pick for defensive player of the year. He's very good.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, actually, I mean, like, I'd say AD to me is like top five also. I feel like he's pretty cleanly top five, actually. Yeah, I wouldn't. No, definitely. I definitely wouldn't take that.
Oh, I remember one other thing you said. Here's what I'll add to it is I also definitely agree. I think a mad underrated part is actually how he can defend smaller players. Because obviously the classic thing in the NBA, it's why I said Shaq would be fucked. Shaq wouldn't be able to physically keep up with those players. Dude, for a guy his size, Anthony Davis is bonkers at moving his feet, mate. He is like way lighter on his feet than he has any business being. Like, he actually can like stay in front of people even. He doesn't have to just like, you know, just shield you pat the one direction. He could just stay in front of some of these people. Or, and like the best thing ever is whenever he actually will probably go all the way to the 3-point line and stay in front of someone. Like, I'm actually looking. It's again why it's so infuriating when he chooses not to fucking play, when he's just like, ah, don't give a fuck. It's like, bro, like, what? I don't know what your major malfunction is. Like, you could really be like a top five player in the NBA today. Today, you could just be like, you could just lock down both sides of the fucking game. Remember, like I said earlier, bro, he's an offensive monster too, and getting all the offensive rebounds. If he actually tried all the time on defense, mate, this guy'd be so good. He'd be so good.
Yeah, locking in for him seems to be in. Yeah, I mean, the main thing is that he's just streaky. It just seems like a motivation thing, or just not being locked in, game out. So that's where the knocks are against him, and why I would take Gobert any given night pretty easily.
And then I'll just throw it in there: if you can almost never in your life ever complete 80 games, then if the guy's equally as good at you and he plays 80 games, I think he should probably win the award. You know what I mean? Like, Because mm-hmm. I've told you before, that's one thing I have a massive problem with all the LeBron fans. Yes, but look at the longevity. He plays 2/3 of a season, you fucking moron. No other player in history ever did that. Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar didn't go, I'll just take these 2/3 of the season. They just played all the games. So surprisingly, yes, their longevity wasn't as good because they played all their games in a shorter span of time, didn't they? Like, so it's such a fucking fugazi stat on that one. Right, let's go down then. What about... well, I'll tell you a fun one because I have to say... I think it's fair that he keeps getting put on the list. Bam Adebayo is he's only a defensive player. Obviously, he's not some monster superstar NBA player, but he deserves to be on this list. Like, people will understand from a couple of years ago, the only reason that Heat team was making it deep is because on the offensive side, Jimmy Butler, then this guy defensively. This guy really does his job. Like, by the way, it seems like as well, another thing I think is very good for defensive players. Notice how on defense, Maui, you can't be selfish in the way you can be on offense. On offense, you can be the guy, give me the ball, get the fuck away from me. The best defensive players are individually dominant, but also awesome in the team. Mate, this is a guy you dream of having on your defensive team. He's just going to do his job. He's not going to have a big ego. He's going to play his part. And he's going to fucking hustle too. And I, by the way, this is why I actually like defense as well. I fucking love players who hustle. I love people where, like, it's not about talent. They just give you their heart every game. It's why, by the way, also to draw an analogy, I get why people like Pat Beverly piss people off. Look, if he was guarding my favourite player, I'd probably hate him. But every game where he's not and I'm just watching him play, I'd fucking brilliant. If you can take aside the annoying aspect, they do a really good job at what they're doing. So I think this guy, just a really fucking very, very serviceable player, just does his job.
What I like about Bam and why I would rate him higher than someone like AD is that actually on defense, that is that I just feel like what was more seared into my brain than anything is how he guarded Giannis last year in the playoffs.
Oh, sure.
Where he was just so sticky. Like, he was like anytime he would catch Giannis on the outside, he just kind of never let Giannis get that downhill speed that I remember so many. I mean, basically some people just like give Giannis a little bit too much space because they know that he can't shoot. But in fact, I feel like what Adebayo does as an individual versus Giannis is that he would stick on him very quickly, and his lateral quickness was good enough that he would catch him and kind of just like almost hip check him. So he just like attaches his hip to Giannis's hip so that Giannis doesn't really have the mobility, because Giannis always wants to like go in and do a little spin move or something like that. But if you just kind of like in legal guarding position push your hip against them, it one doesn't really foul bait too much. Like, you're not gonna, it's like the refs in the NBA want to call you for a foul when your hand slaps their arm. But if your hip is just kind of touching the other person's hip, they don't really call that as much, which I'm not really sure the legalities on that, because sometimes I see it called, sometimes I don't see it called. And that's why defense and fouls can be so weird in this league. But at least in that series, they weren't really calling it too much against him. And so he was able to slow down, you know, an MVP candidate player by just using this type of defense where other people probably try to like meet the shot at the top. But I think that Giannis was so just kind of discombobulated by the fact that somebody is actually sticking on me that Bam was so good there. And beyond that, I mean, Adebayo, when he's guarding other positions too, like, he can be really a really good disruptor. He has good prediction skills in terms of like where the ball is going next for the, like, in terms of reading schemes, he's just like really strong at that too. He's in the right place at the right time. And probably like in terms of him versus AD, yeah, I would take him. I feel like AD, it feels like AD has better wingspan, so like he can kind of like recover a little bit better. But Adebayo's positioning is better. It's like I feel like Adebayo is a smarter defender than someone like AD, who kind of relies a little bit more on his natural gifts.
Yeah, I actually do think that's an underrated aspect of this guy's game on both sides. He actually just seems like a guy who understands, he understands the court, where everyone is on it, etc. Like, on the, for example, he's another guy where I love this guy's passing game on offense, but on defense, he always knows, you can tell where the other players are on the floor. Like, mega defensive presence. He's going to protect the fuck out of the rim. By the way, there's another person like Anthony Davis who can move his fucking feet for a big guy too. He's also, because this is the thing, you notice, this is what people like Shaq are missing, is what you have to think of the NBA as, and I'll give the analogy. This is one of the areas where, even though actually I'm not a proponent of it, when you think of Darwinian evolution, if people don't know the concept of like natural selection, the flaw people always make is the joke is everyone's brain's coded to think of a creator anyway, because what they do is they go, well, evolution wanted like him to go this way. So when the environment changed, the animal, it's like, no, you have to think of it. The analogy is a cheese grater. So you have a piece of cheese. The grater is whatever filter you've set. So in this scenario, it'd be like the environment in Darwinian evolution, right? Or what incentives there are. And the idea is, you you take the block of cheese, put it on the grater. Some of the cheese is going to go through the hole. That's the one that gets through the filter. The part that doesn't didn't get through the filter. In this analogy, in Darwin, usually they die out, right? So what people are missing is this. You're not picking a player like you made a player and dropping him. What the NBA should be doing is figuring out what it's selecting for. And in the modern day, as you'll notice in this conversation, the Shaq era of a center is a really big, tall guy who just blocks the shots. That will always have some utility, but it's not the best type of defensive center anymore. In the modern day, you have to be able to move because everyone is spacing and swinging the ball. Mobility is so huge. That's why these guys are way higher on this list than people who just stand and block the ball to me, or superstars who occasionally play a bit of defense. Like, these guys also play every fucking possession, guys. They aren't just doing, like I said before, where the Kobe's of the world maybe like wait till the fourth quarter, then tell, you know, their defense, hey, I'll take this guy to ship. Like, they're doing this from minute one. That's the other thing as well, mate. That's why I have Madrid. That's why I think probably Anthony Davis, you're right, I'd probably put Bam that day over. The difference is this guy will do it every game. Anthony Davis, when he takes the game off offensively, he's going to take the game off defensively too, probably. Fighting yes, you know?
Yeah, and obviously, like, I mean, Adebayo knows that he's also just supposed to be the defensive anchor for that team, and so he can give 100%. And I feel like that's kind of like, that's one area where, for example, Gobert is always just going to win because he can expend 100% of his energy on defense, because the most he does on offense is like he'll screen, sometimes roll, but he's just kind of like being a hindrance to the other team almost on their defense. Like, he's just kind of being a blocker. Like, if you could just put him anywhere on the floor and just be like, stand and don't move just so that we can work around you, that's kind of what he gets to do. And Adebayo, I think Adebayo actually does a little bit more on offense than Gobert, and that probably actually hurts him in terms of his defensive output because he's just a little bit more tired.
Oh no, what people forget is that this guy came in the NBA with no offensive game, and he actually did develop it over the years, dude. He actually got pretty, like I said, even stuff like, if people don't know, this guy can bring the ball up the floor even. He's actually like, he's got way better. That's why I know as well, this guy must have a good attitude. He must do, mate. Because to develop like this implies to me you listened to people and you did develop you worked on your weaknesses, etc., and you gave it your all. Fair play. Good player. Right, what about, let me think, who else has another? What about Jarrett Allen? You want to do him?
Yeah. We could do Jarrett Allen. There was one other guy I wanted to shout out on this that's kind of like lower on these, but we could do Jarrett Allen first. Let's do him. I feel like Jarrett Allen is positionally worse than Adebayo and obviously Gobert for that matter, but man, his athleticism is crazy. Like, he's also like one of those people where it's like, for a center having almost like, you usually talk about the first step for offense in terms of like, can you blow by somebody? Oh my god, Jarrett Allen can just recover so well. He's kind of like when I was watching Zion come into the league, for example, it was kind of like Zion's positioning on defense can be so bad, but his first step is so good. And Jarrett Allen's a little bit like that. He's better. He's better defensive fundamentals than Zion, but he also has that explosiveness where he can just catch up to people so quickly that his ability as a center to, one, he can just like jump up and he can just like be the wall in the center that you need him to be to just be a disruptor. But he also can do like chase down blocks if he does get blown by. And it's just so impressive to watch his pure speed. And I feel like, yeah, in terms of like explosiveness, he's probably, I think of all of the people on this list, I don't think that there's anybody that is explosive as a defender to me as Jarrett Allen. And so, yeah, I don't watch as much Cleveland as like every other team here, but in terms of like what I have caught of him now that I was like paying attention for this, like it's really interesting that like people like he's positionally of all the people we talked about, probably the worst one for me here, but just he's not going to make it. Even if you think you got by him, you probably didn't get by him.
Yes. The problem this guy has, I will say, by the way, I should have mentioned this for the Wembanyama guy, but I'll just throw this in there now. The one problem some of these guys also have is, like, the difference is Wembanyama's in his rookie career, so I could trust he could maybe do this. These guys need to put more weight on, I do think, though. Because here's the thing, I agree that like the speed is very essential, but like, put it this way, this guy weighs less than LeBron. If people don't know, that's real. He weighs less than LeBron James. Like, he's actually quite thin for a fucking big, like Wemby, they're actually kind of, their frame's quite thin. They're big, which works. And look, the mobility's great, but I do think maybe they should put a little bit on. Like, they're going to have, defensively in the playoffs, it's always good to have like, be a bit unmovable, as it were. They can't back you down, you know. I'm with you, Lloyd. He's a very good shot blocker as well. His problem is, on this particular list, There's too many people that are basically him but better. So he can't win in this particular case. But yeah, look, if you're making a list of 5-10 people, he deserves to be on there. I'm with you.
Yeah. That's why I'm not too interested in him necessarily, even though he was kind of high on the list. One guy that I feel like just has gotten literally I don't hear his name mentioned nearly enough, because he's probably like the fifth least important person on the Timberwolves is Jaden McDaniels. Jaden McDaniels.
Oh, he's not on any of these lists, by the way. He's not on any of them.
he's when I'm watching the Timberwolves it's like you got Conley, who's kind of a little bit, he's just older now. He can't really stay with people as well. You got Anthony Edwards, who is really the offensive motor of that team. And then you have Karl Anthony Towns, who is also like one of them. He's more of an offensive contributor than he is a defensive one. And then you kind of have these two guys, like then you have Jaden McDaniels and you have Gobert. And Jaden McDaniels is obviously like the least talked about of their starting lineup for sure. But what he's doing is like he's guarding positions 2 through 4 so well. And sometimes he actually has to pick up the one a little bit, because like Conley does get blown by. Anthony Edwards sometimes doesn't have the best positioning. And so McDaniel sometimes has to be that like first line of defense to try to help them out. And actually his size is good enough that Jaden McDaniels he has like a ton of block shots in terms of catching like centers. If like he's on a rotation with Karl Anthony Towns and himself or something like that, like Cat isn't actually always that great at necessarily defending the centers. So McDaniels has to help Karl Anthony Towns out a bit. And it's like, he just goes 100% on defense. Like he does have every now and then offensive contributions for sure. Like he's not a scrub, but you're never going to put him on like, he's never going to make an all-star team. He's never going to make an all-NBA team, because that's just not his job at all. But he's kind of like the glue guy for me. And in some ways, if this guy had this kind of defensive skill set, and he doesn't have, to me, necessarily like the IQ of somebody like Draymond, but he can be everywhere on the floor like Draymond. And it feels like the Timberwolves kind of like let him loose on the defensive end, where he can break down his own like if he has to guard a guy that he doesn't think is a threat, he's just gonna help. Like the amount of help defense this guy does when it's Conley getting blown by, when it's Edwards, when it's even Karl Anthony Towns, like he is so good at it. And it's like easily, if Gobert weren't so by far and away the best defender on this team, and probably in the league for that matter, Jaden McDaniels would be talked about in defensive player of the year conversations for my money. And let's just say it's like a typical run of the mill center, like not one of the guys we've already mentioned, like a Jared Allen or an Adebayo. But if it were like a normal average center on this team instead of one of those guys, like McDaniels would definitely be a top 6 defensive player of the year conversation guy for me.
Yeah, by the way, I also do agree. If you actually just want to, I'll tell you what we'll do next, or we'll do in the future maybe. Another thing we could also do is we could do an episode where we try to just explain like reasons to watch teams and give people like sell them on it. Because I have to say the Timberwolves is actually one of the best teams in the NBA to watch, even though you'll know from the earlier episode, I didn't pick them to be one of the teams that could win the NBA because I thought inexperience will hurt them. But if you look how deep their team is, and me, almost every position as a player you'll be interested in. It's low key, like a very well GM'd squad, I think. Especially because of the development of some of the players. This is one of them as well, because this is another guy where if you're going to pick someone who's not the center who's going to be on this list, actually, he does do a pretty good job. Like, this is a guy where, as you say, he can defend on the perimeter, absolutely. For a forward, he's fucking tall. It's like 6'9", 6'10". He's got a big wingspan as well. He can fuck you up and disrupt you. He can block some shots even. By the way, he's fast. There's, as you say, like he's got quickness. So yeah, no, if we're going with if to start with the initial discussion, we're not going for just the centers, essentially. This is another player that you'll never get your flowers in the same way. Except we see you have to sort of like tunnel vision on people to see how they literally defend one-on-one. But no, this guy is definitely slept on. And like you say, his problem also is his team just has, it's too deep a team. So you literally, as you say, there's like 4 or 5 names before you even need to mention him, especially if we're talking offensively. Obviously, like offensively, it's non-existent. So who gives a fuck on that one, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just never going to be talked about.